This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening. And now, a few words from the general.
Americans love a winner and will not tolerate a loser. Americans play to win all the time. I wouldn't give a hoot in hell for a man who lost and laughed. That's why Americans have never lost and will never lose a war. Because the very thought of losing is hateful to America.
Real World War II General George Patton, played by actor George C. Scott, probably never said those precise words, although he is immortalized in that film portrayal in the 1970 Oscar-winning film that bears his name. But we begin with the generals and their view of the troops they need right now. In 2014, who needs a standing army and why?
We are repositioning to focus on the strategic challenges and opportunities that will define our future. New technologies, new centers of power, and a world that is growing more volatile, more unpredictable, and in some instances, more threatening to the United States.
It sounds like Secretary of Defense Chuck Hagel is trying to alarm us, and yet he's proposing to shrink the U.S. combat-ready soldier force to about 450,000, down from over 500,000. Russia has an army of well over 1 million. China has 2.3 million men-at-arms. But these numbers apparently have little to do with the actual military needs of these countries and much more to do with domestic politics. In the case of the United States, shrinking the Pentagon to match strategic military realities has been a challenge for decades. Joining us to try and understand where Defense Secretary Hagel may be headed is Andrew Bacevich, retired colonel who is now a professor of international relations at Boston University. His latest book is Breach of Trust, How Americans Failed Their Soldiers and Their Country. Andrew, welcome back.
Well, thank you very much.
So a couple of very basic questions. Who needs a standing army in the year 2014 and why? And is the U.S. one of them?
Well, yes, we need a standing army, although in some senses, the question is off point. Armies don't fight alone. As they did, for example, in the days of Napoleon or the days of Grant and Lee. Armies fight as part of a larger conglomeration. We really need to think of land power, air power, sea power, cyber power, functioning as kind of an integrated entity. And I think the point Americans need to appreciate today is that the role of land power in that team is likely, no guarantees, is likely to diminish in the decade or a couple of decades to come, and that's why our army is shrinking.
So how do we compare the numbers, 450,000, that Secretary of Defense Chuck Hagel is looking for with the more than 500,000 soldiers ready to go today? With this World War II marker, which is being played in the media, how important is the sort of World War II troop level marker in terms of our strategy with the land power today?
I think it's utterly irrelevant. I mean, among other things, if we end up with an army of, let's say, 450,000 after this next drawdown occurs, that army of 450,000 will actually be vastly more capable than the army of several million that we had back in World War II. So we don't need a huge army. We do need a capable army. But the question of what the heck we want an army to do is the one I think that requires a great deal of thought at the present moment. The fact of the matter is we're not going to invade China. We're not going to invade Russia. There does seem to be an increasing need, I'm not sure if it makes sense strategically, but an increasing reliance on smaller scale special operations forces that kind of go in, do things quickly and get out. Some of those forces will be army forces, but the numbers involved are not necessarily big numbers.
So much to talk about here. How then are we to evaluate the Chinese People's Liberation Army, the PLA, with a standing army of 2.3 million? Is that some kind of economic stimulus program in China? Is that a political number? Is that something that is actually strategically important to China and its neighbors, 2.3 million men-at-arms?
First of all, it's true that People's Liberation Army is also becoming smaller gradually over time. I think it's also true that the People's Liberation Army has in some senses been, its function has been as much domestic as international. It's been one of the pillars of the Chinese Communist Party and a vehicle that enables the party to maintain control. But let's imagine, and it's not unimaginable, let's imagine that there would be another war between Vietnam and China, two nations that don't have the friendliest history. Let's imagine that the Chinese army invades Vietnam. Should the United States choose to involve itself in such a war, I would hope they wouldn't, it's not going to be, the role we would play would not be to send a 500,000 soldiers to Vietnam as we did back in the 1960s. So again, we only have a certain amount of money that we're willing to invest in defense. Quite frankly, we already spend more than we probably ought to. So the question is, how do you distribute those dollars in order to acquire the mix of capabilities most likely to be relevant in a future conflict? And at the present moment in history, it does appear to make sense to give fewer dollars to the Army and more dollars to the Navy and to the Air Force.
All right. Since I've been covering Pentagon stories going back to the base closing days of the 1980s, it always has appeared that troop numbers and specific procurement programs and numbers of troops has been something of a CAT scan of the American Congress. It's much more about what resides in each individual congressional district and less about overall strategy. What's the chance that Hegel is going to be able to get any diminishment through Congress, which is protecting its turf in each one of those districts where the Pentagon has a role?
Well, I mean, I think the history would say if he's lucky, he'll get half a loaf. But again, I think your question is a very good one. Here is the military-industrial congressional complex in action. And anything that is likely to affect jobs back in the congressman's home district, whether it's jobs because of a base that somebody wants to close or jobs because of a weapon system that somebody wants to close down the production plant, is going to be very substantial resistance. And it doesn't matter whether the individual member is a Republican or a Democrat or is perceived to be, a defense hawk or is perceived to be a dove. They're going to protect what seems to provide an immediate benefit to their constituents.
Andrew Bacevich, retired colonel, now a professor of international relations at Boston University. His latest book is Breach of Trust, How Americans Failed Their Soldiers and Their Country. Thanks so much, as always.
Thank you.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.